Can't you see it? A glistening 100-megawatt solar field begging to be built? It's photovoltaic modules and balance of system powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean? We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
CNBC's Big January continues with the JPM Healthcare Conference, the Amex Golf Tournament, Inauguration Day, and the World Economic Forum in Davos. Get ahead of the game. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Get some good texts, man, on the heels of Xavier Leggett talking about eating raccoon for Thanksgiving. Raccoon's getting a lot of love on the text page and on my personal bat phone right here from people who've eaten it before. So yeah. It's pretty good.
Raccoon, we don't have that many people who have eaten possum.
No.
I thought I saw one. It was further down on the text line. But, yeah, raccoon's getting a lot of love.
Rabbit, squirrel getting a lot of love, too. So
I feel stupid for never having eaten a squirrel because they're all around, you know?
Yeah.
They're just, it's just so plentiful.
You just grab it off the
tree. If I were into squirrels, it would almost be like, oh, I'm into Twizzlers.
Right.
You know? Like, I can go grab Twizzlers anywhere. I could go grab a squirrel anywhere.
That's true. Because my ex-wife is from southern Louisiana, so I've spent a lot of time down there. My ex-father-in-law liked to take my kids frogging. You'd go out on a boat in the dark at night on the bayou, and you're just scooping frogs out of the bayou. That's all you're doing. You're sticking your hand in there, and you're scooping frogs, and you come back in the boat, and there's 200 frogs in the boat. And frogs can be a good... I love frogs legs. Frogs legs is a good delicacy as well down there. But frogging as an activity, could we maybe create like a squirreling club and just like go around River Oaks grabbing squirrels off of trees and things like that? You know, go around some of the neighborhoods where there's squirrels?
I'm guessing there's an ordinance against it. You know,
I thought you were going to say, you thought there might already be a club that's doing this. And I would...
A squirrel club?
Happily join. Yeah, yeah.
I don't know. But we're way too snobbish in the number and types of meat that we. I might only be eating four mammals currently. It needs to be more.
Right, it does.
How many mammals are you? Like how many different types of mammals have you eaten in the last year? I've eaten a cow.
Yeah.
I've eaten a pig.
Yep. Alligator, is that a mammal?
That's not
or
a
is
mammal.
That a reptile?
No.
Okay, that's a reptile.
Yeah.
Damn. Okay.
Wait, I'm running out of mammals. Chicken's not a mammal. God, my God.
Oh my God.
Ugh.
All right.
I might as well be some fancy lad that, you know, grew up with a silver spoon in my mouth.
Let this segment be a warning to all you mammals out there. Seth Payne is on a rampage today.
I've eaten venison, yep. So that's three mammals.
Three mammals, yeah, yeah.
The bear was several years ago, so that
doesn't
count.
No, it's recently. Yeah, yeah. You might be at three right now. All right, I'll let you think about it.
Did I say pig?
You said pig,
right?
Yeah, the pigs, yeah, you can't count that twice. You mentioned pig already. Jalen Petrie, he is done for the season, getting surgery on his torn pectoral muscle. This is a big hit, man. Here's D'Amico Ryans talking about the safeties, the young safeties on this team, and man, what the Dolphins, the pressure they can put on a group of safeties on an NFL team, and now you don't have Jalen Petrie. Here is D'Amico Ryans on that dilemma.
Eye discipline is key this week. Right? Even though the ball is out, they have a lot of eye candy, as we call it. A lot of eye candy where they present things where a play is going one way and it goes to the other side. So everybody, you just have to maintain your discipline, make sure your eyes are in the proper place with the defensive call, with what we're asking guys to do. If your eyes are right, you have a chance to be right. But if you're seeing too much, then that's where you run into problems. So just ask our guys, see a little, see a lot.
See a little, see a lot. Mm-hmm. I like that a lot.
Mm-hmm.
It's tough. It's like everything else in life. You got to find that balance. And the hard part against playing against the Dolphins is, man, they do a really good job of having an option on both sides of the field. So you get everybody committed to one side of the field, and then there's an easy outlet on the other. Or likewise, because of the gravitational pull of Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle, you got to respect their deep threat ability, and it opens everything up underneath. So it puts a lot of stress on your linebackers and your safeties.
Yeah.
And that's where, like, I like Jimmy Ward at the star position replacing Jalen Petrie, but that means that you've got You've got Eric Murray, and you've got Kalen Bullock.
Yeah.
Man, I went like 3 months without making that mistake. Remember the first, right after the draft, I was doing Cade Stover and Kalen Bullock screwing it up all over the place.
You had a good run, so, yes.
Kalen, it was good while it lasted.
You had a good run.
and I love Kalen Bullock and the way he's played, but he's not a veteran safety yet that's seen everything and can kind of anticipate. And the job of a safety, a lot of the times, is to erase the mistakes that happen in front of him.
Yep.
That's where Eric Murray, and when you look at some of these 30-plus yard gains that the Texans' defense has allowed, a lot of times it's come with safety play being a little bit off.
Hey, there's Eric Murray again.
There's
23. That'll be a big deal. No Jalen Petrie. Now, they did get some guys back, the Texans. Foley Fatakasi practicing, limited, but practicing yesterday. Denico Autry, limited, but practicing yesterday. And, of course, we've been talking all week about Christian Harris and Kenyon Green back in practicing. Neither of those two have been reactivated to the 53-man roster. I think the hope is, certainly with Christian Harris, that is the case, that he will be activated soon. Here's D'Amico Ryans. Here, we got a couple cuts here. Let's start with D'Amico on Christian Harris being back.
Having Christian back, just having his presence back, has really been helpful for everyone. Like, everybody's excited to see him just back out on the field, his energy, everybody understand his playmaking ability, sideline to sideline. Like, Christian, he's an explosive player, dynamic player for us. So, you know, it's encouraging to see him back. He's had a long road, hasn't played football in a long time, so it'd be a process of getting him back rolling. But it's encouraging to see a guy who's been out for such a long time, dealing with an insignificant injury that's taken, you know, a long time to heal. And first and foremost, he's just proud of the work that he's put in to make it back, even at this point in the season. So we'll see where he ends up towards the end of the week, but he's doing really good.
You know what? I didn't know if there was maybe a Freudian slip there or not, or if I just didn't. It felt like he said an insignificant injury, which is that ended up being significant.
Yeah.
But it sounded like he said it felt like it should have been an insignificant injury.
Yeah, right.
It was, and yet it ended up being like Kyle Tucker, an insignificant injury that turns into something much, much longer and probably really frustrating. Like, it's super frustrating when you have something like
everything
that.
Everything with this one sounded like there were a lot of twists and turns. Like, there were fits and starts. Like, there were times they thought Christian could be coming back, and then, you know, there'd be two steps backwards. I got to imagine if the way they've handled this injury, Seth, if he's good enough to be back out on the practice field, that he's good enough to be back in a game on as meticulous and careful as they've been with this.
Yeah.
I got to imagine that getting him back out on the practice, it's not going to be two more weeks of practice now, I hope. You know what I mean?
They were treating him with the utmost caution. I thought that maybe the interesting part of it is that they had him on that initial opening IR. It's like a special designation of injured reserve. But then, after that, and I don't know what the rules are, maybe they couldn't have put him on IR again or not, but I wonder like how long they've kind of been in touch and go mode of, okay, we don't know when this is going to respond.
Yeah.
Or, you know, like maybe he'll be available in 2 weeks, but we're just not quite sure. So that part of it makes me feel like I don't want to treat this in my mind like, oh yeah, he's back, he's healthy, he's ready to go, he's going to play at least 50% of the snaps. I think they're probably, as Caserio talked about on the GM show with Mark and John, they monitor these. Like Kenyon Green and Christian Harris this week, they're going to monitor them, see how they're moving in practice, look at the GPS stats, all of that, and how they feel the next day before they make a decision on how much he plays on Sunday.
Yep. Now, we've not seen any Christian Harris interviews or clips yet, and I'm guessing that's because he's not back on the 53. They had open locker room yesterday. They'll have it today and tomorrow as well, where the media can go in and talk to players. I thought this was, to me, this was the most interesting cut from open locker room yesterday. This is Joe Mixon talking about going against the Texans last year as a member of the Bengals in week 10, I think it was. And he said, man, we didn't have Christian Harris on our scouting report, but he showed up in that game.
I remember playing against him last year. I remember one of the first runs, I believe, or it was a check down I had. I just remember number 48. I'm like, who the hell is this? Like, he was talking about flying to the ball. He making a tackle and, like, turned up. I'm like, man, who is this? He went on a scouting report, and he should have been. Like, you know what I'm saying? But, I mean, I'm happy that, you know, my man, he coming off of his injury. You know, it was an unfortunate situation for him. But, you know, he get to play the game that he love, and obviously he got the teammates uplifting him, and we just going to obviously make sure he do his best to come in and play his game. Don't play nobody's game, and, you know, just execute on the fundamentals. And I don't know how they're going to play it in terms of his snap count, but I know for a fact when he enter, he's going to give us 1,000%. So I think it's going to be a great uplift for the defense, man.
Here's the thing about that. He wasn't on the scouting report. For the first half of last season, Christian Harris was not playing good football.
He was not the same guy that he ended up being at all.
No, he started to click, I think, if I remember, in the second half of that Buccaneers game.
Yeah.
And then they played Cincinnati the next week. So that he's not a prominent part of the scouting report at that point last year is not all that surprising if you go back and dissect the season.
He literally doubled his production in a lot of categories. Like in tackles for a loss, like he was just almost twice as active in a lot of regards. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it was the D'Amico glow up effect took over. And I guess, yeah, the question is, all right, if Christian Harris gets out there with no training camp, I mean, what did he have, like a half of a practice,
like
of training
30
camp?
Minutes of practice, yeah.
Yeah, before he had to get escorted off the field.
Yep.
What's he going to look like? Is it going to be first half of last season Christian Harris? Is it going to be peak Christian Harris? We have no idea. I think if he's out there, his athleticism is going to be on display. Mm-hmm. I think there's going to be some sideline-to-sideline plays. But it's also, man, when it comes to being shaking the rust off and everything, the Dolphins do a really good job of putting guys into mental binds.
Yeah.
So your reaction time, you take one false step, that's enough for them to create a window for somebody to catch something and turn it upfield. So, yeah, we'll be dialed in on Christian Harris.
People on the text line, Seth, are asking, I think they're trying to help you come up with a few more mammals so you can get a lot of people bringing up lamb and goat. Have you eaten either lamb or goat over the last several months?
Lamb or goat? Not in the last year, but I've had both of them. But I need to reintroduce it into my diet.
Yeah,
I feel like I might be in danger of being malnourished. Just I'm not getting enough variety in my mammals.
Yeah, you got to shock the body sometimes.
I looked up a list of different mammals that people eat,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of them do not appeal to me at all. Mm. I will not be eating dog anytime soon. This is around the world.
Not any type of dog. No, dogs are beautiful
horse
creatures.
I just can't do.
Who?
Horse is very common in a lot of countries, and I just couldn't do it. Oh, bison. I've done bison plenty of times.
Okay. Yeah, bison. Bison's a good one. Now we're getting recommendations on where the fattest squirrels are in Houston. Herman Park has the fattest squirrels, someone is texting. Look, I was kind of joking about going around squirreling around town, like scooping squirrels and throwing them into a basket. They are much harder creatures to corral than docile frogs in a bayou at night. But I appreciate the recommendation. Herman Park has the fattest squirrels. We're getting getting some recommendations, Seth, the five-star squirreling places.
You could eat squirrel that's been fed by the loving hands of toddlers and school children.
Fellow Houstonians, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Houstonian-fed squirrels. Those are the best kind of squirrels, the ones that are Houstonian-fed.
Venison I've had.
Yeah, venison.
Domestic cat I have not. Donkey, no.
Okay.
They're not going to happen.
Yeah.
Would you eat a donkey first or a horse first if you had to choose?
I don't know. Just surprise me. Neither sound great. Yeah.
Kangaroo? Would you eat a kangaroo?
Kangaroo is kind of a delicacy, is it not?
I'd eat that. Probably not. Probably not in Australia.
I'd eat that before a horse or a donkey. A kangaroo.
It's funny, like how different people from different countries view their animals that seem exotic to us. Like kangaroos are just a giant pain in the ass to Australians. we're like, oh my gosh, look at the majestic marsupial.
Yeah. We're like, oh, it's in Winnie the Pooh. Come on.
Yeah. Monkeys, monkeys are a big deal to us.
Yeah.
But you go to places where monkeys are a pain in the butt a lot of people in a lot of countries.
They're the mosquitoes of their places, yeah.
They're mischievous.
Yeah. They're mischievous, yes. Had a couple people asking where I got my Free Aziz t-shirt. You see my Free Aziz t-shirt I'm rocking today, Seth?
I see it.
To match your sign. My buddy,
I see your virtue signaling. My buddy, good for you.
My buddy Garrett, Houston Stressens, at Texans Commenter, is... He's got these.
Have to pay a royalty to Aziz for something like that?
That I'm aware of. I don't know.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's...
I always wondered how it works with the t-shirt company stuff when you're using somebody's
It's a good question because it feels like all the local... We have a lot of really good local t-shirt outlets here that do a lot of really cool team stuff. I don't know. I'm not sure what the answer is to that. But I'm rocking this T-shirt today, man. Free Aziz. At Texans Commenter, if you want to hit him up.
We should get a... We should get our own apparel line for Payne and Pendergast.
I actually talked to Garrett about that a little bit yesterday. Like, it's easier than you would think to get something like that off the ground.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. No. Yeah, I have no doubt that it's easy. No, it's super easy to get places that, like, drop ship T-shirts
Yeah. And they get their cut. You know, it's a fairly safe business. You know, they get their cut of it and, you know.
Yeah. It's all, and you don't have to actually deal with inventory and all that.
Or manufacturing or employees. People, really, other than people buying
your
stuff?
Yeah, all the things that prevent me from being a world-class empire builder.
Dealing with people, yeah.
I need things like that where I don't actually have to manage people.
Answering the phone. I hate that.
Mm-hmm. God.
Ugh, the worst.
Dealing with complaints?
Yeah. All I can think of is you as a kid. We're a corporation. When Seth was working for his dad. Working the customer service phones.
My dad and the business was spiraling downward, and I was the only person in the office at the age of 15, manning the phones, taking calls from disgruntled people who had invested tidy sums into his my father's 1-900 business.
And your response to them when they complain? What did somebody ask you? Someone's like, "Are you even a real company or something?"
Yeah. Are you even a real company? Yes, we're a corporation.
I don't know what.
In my mind, that was all like, I had no idea how you became a corporation. I thought it was like some, I didn't know that you could just, now you can do it online. But back in the day, whatever. Go down and file with the courthouse.
Oh, my God. All right. How are we feeling? How are we feeling on this Kyle Tucker thing? Too many insiders. If you're someone who owns a Kyle Tucker jersey, you might want to get that one ready for a swap out. If we were to believe the insiders that we were hearing right now, yet another Astros insider seems to think the Astros will be moving on here from Kyle Tucker. We'll see. We'll hear from him coming up next.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
We'll get to Brian McTaggart talking about Kyle Tucker in just a second. Hey, Seth, when Reggie and John come in for the toss, we got to ask Reggie about last night. We had our company Christmas party last night.
Yeah.
And we all went to the Ugly Sweater Musical at the Hobby Center, which is sort of an interactive musical. And we all wore ugly sweaters. You get pulled up on stage. And the storyline for the play was that there's a company and they're going out of business, but they invented the ugly sweater and now everything is great. The end, right? And there's a lot of music embedded, but it's interactive. You get pulled up on stage. You could from the audience to participate in a dancing or a role in the play. I got pulled up on stage for a little bit. I did my thing up there. Reggie got pulled up there, and he was one of the sweater models. And there was a young lady who was playing.
It was Reggie. Okay, all right. I misheard you the first time. Yeah. I thought you said that it was Ron. Okay,
no, it was Reggie.
I heard Hughley, I guess, when he said Reggie. Okay,
so it was Reggie. Reggie got pulled up on stage, and he was one of the models for the ugly sweaters. So he's up there doing his thing, walking the runway. And one of the characters was this cute young lady who played the daughter of the business owner.
Mm-hmm.
And she was the one, her role in there was she was the one presenting each of the sweaters to the audience to get the reaction. The first one walking the runway was Patrick Creighton, who had an ugly Christmas sweater, literally with an oven built into it, and the door flipped down in front of his belly. It was actually a pretty funny and cool sweater. Patrick did great, too. Reggie walks up there to do his modeling, and she broke character to say how cute he was. Like, you could tell she's in the middle of her lines, and she just stops in the middle of her lines, and she goes, "God, you are so cute." So that was the big talk in the lobby after the play was over. Like, so, hey, Reggie, is there something there? You gonna pursue that?
Yeah. She's the boss's daughter.
In the play,
it doesn't marry up. Oh,
in the play,
the whole fiction versus reality.
I know. It's a little Inception thing going on there. Yeah.
She's actually quite likely dirt poor. The exact opposite.
She's an up and coming actress in Houston, Texas.
Yeah. You're not okay.
She's
not
cute
the
though, man.
Daughter.
Yeah. She was cute. Yeah. So we'll have to we'll ask Reggie when he comes in. That's the tea. But it was a great shout out to Hobby Center and to everybody putting on that play, Ugly Christmas Sweater Musical. If you're looking for a really fun thing to go do this holiday season with some people, it was really cool.
Are you sure that that was genuinely her breaking character, or was that part of like a scripted breaking of the fourth wall?
As you know, I am pretty good at being able to discern between a work and a shoot, because of my wrestling background. I can tell.
You're certain it wasn't kayfabe that she was saying he was cute.
I don't think it was kayfabe. I think it was a shoot.
Not that he's not cute, but you know, in that moment to break character.
In front of a crowd, in front of an audience full of people, right? No, I think, I don't think it was a work. I think it was a shoot that she thinks Reggie is cute. I think there was something there. We'll find out.
You know why I was thinking that way? I was just, some video came across my timeline yesterday of this guy, this dude, talking about how when he first got to New York, he wasn't making that much money. So he was really strategic in how he spent his money at the strip clubs to earn the respect of the strippers. If he only had $150, he'd go in and he'd spend it in like 15 minutes. And then they'd think he was a high roller. He'd say, I got to go. And I'm just watching this and I'm like, whoa. And am I crazy, or is the whole concept of a strip club not that you have to try to impress the strippers? Like, what?
You know what they're...
Why are you trying to build up cred with strippers?
Yeah.
Until you get to the point where you're making more money and you can spend more money. I did not get it at all.
Oh, my God.
I need somebody to explain to me how I would... I've been looking at strip clubs all wrong for the last 49 years. Okay. That somehow I'm supposed to be worried about, like, whether I'm establishing myself as bona fide in the eyes of the strippers.
Just give her the 20s, man. That's it. That's just...
I didn't. It was so weird.
That's funny.
But it was perfect that it was in New York, because I was like, this is a Yankees fan mentality.
Oh, yeah.
Like, oh, they love us. Yeah. Soto loves us, right? He loves us.
Hey,
he took all that money from us.
I gave my heart.
He loves us.
We gave our heart to that stripper.
I helped put Soto through college.
Dude.
And now he left me in the lurch. We had love. We had a connection.
Nick Turturro at the strip club. I need this SNL skit. I need it.
These ladies all love me.
They love me.
They can't get enough of my shtick.
I gave my heart to them. I gave my heart. Nick Turturro, you might be giving your heart to Kyle Tucker here pretty soon. You never know. Here was Brian McTaggart yesterday on MLB TV. Tags covers the Astros beat for MLB.com. Does a great job. On the Astros and the likelihood of them moving Kyle Tucker in a trade.
I think there's a very real chance he would not be back after next year. And we've seen the Astros lose free agent after free agent, Correa, Springer, Garrett Cole, and they continue to win. But at some point, there's a gap now. They don't have the prospects like they used to. So now they have to make a trade and fill some of these holes. But yes, it certainly seems like there's momentum towards a Tucker trade. The Yankees make a lot of sense in a lot of ways. That would be a consolation prize maybe for Juan Soto, but do the Yankees want to go down that road again of a guy that they don't have under contract for next year and then try to resign him for big money? But the Astros could get a couple of impact players, maybe a prospect or two, save a lot of money, and Astros fans would probably scream, but this makes a lot of sense to trade Kyle Tucker at this point.
I'll say this just purely from a baseball standpoint, a contract standpoint. I know that the Yankees would have to give up prospects to get Kyle Tucker, whereas Juan Soto, well, they already gave up prospects, I suppose, to get Soto in the building to begin with. I would rather have Kyle Tucker for 10 years and $350 to $400 million than Juan Soto for 15 years and $765 million. Mm-hmm. Kyle Tucker does a few things much better than Juan Soto does, defensively on the base. And Juan Soto is a Hall of Fame elite level hitter. Like, he's amazing. But those 5 extra years and the extra 10 to 15 million per year. Now, you're the Yankees, so you just don't care. But I'm saying if money mattered and the value of the deal mattered, I'd rather have Kyle Tucker for 10 over, for 350 to 400 over 10 than I would the deal that Juan Soto got from the Mets.
Yeah, it's interesting. In baseball, too, like, without getting into a deep dive about it, it's not like they're just, I think randomly and haphazardly throwing money into the wind and not acknowledging the future payment, but it's that they figure the cap is going to increase over time, or excuse me, the CBT will increase over time, et cetera, et cetera. But they operate in a different financial world.
Yeah.
I think that, on the sum total of it, you look at any contract in sports and usually the highest paid guys, like, on average, I would guess are probably overpaid ultimately over the course of their contract.
Oh, the longer the deal, the worse it is, too.
Yeah. And some teams are just more capable of handling that than others. And there's very, very few teams that are capable of handling that financially.
Yeah. And I guess my point is, I know Soto wound up with the Mets, not the Yankees. I guess my point is that the Yankees might wind up in a better They might wind up in a better situation than had they given Juan Soto 15 years, 700 something million like the Mets.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That now, so far as Tucker goes, you and I thought, you know, just from listening to listeners and everything, it feels like it's already started to happen, which I endorse this tactic psychologically. Really zero in on Kyle Tucker's playoff stats and yes, over the course of his career. Like the very same thing that made Correa more valuable than maybe a lot of people felt like he should be was that he is consistently really good in the playoffs.
That's right.
And there's enough of a sample size that it's not a fluke. With Tucker, people might not look at him the same way. And but if he leaves the Astros, I think what you're going to start to hear a lot is, yeah, well, look, he was garbage in the playoffs anyway. All right. And he wasn't garbage, but he wasn't special in the playoffs. So I think ultimately that's the coping mechanism. That's what I'll choose to use.
Okay.
It's like, just wait until October. We'll see how he does.
Can I add one here? And
yeah.
Let me, and I'm just workshopping this. I'm not saying I necessarily 100% believe this, but do we know how Kyle Tucker is going to react to getting generational life-changing money? And the reason I bring that up, if you recall, when he was a younger player, he's probably matured a little bit, but when he was a younger player, he needed a couple talking to's from the veteran guys and from A.J. Hinch back in the day about professionalism and focus and whatnot. Can we be 100% sure that the less professional, less focused Kyle Tucker doesn't come walking through that door once you hand him $400 million? Seth, as an Astros fan that is getting ready to put up several defense mechanisms emotionally here, I say that is something that his suitors should worry about.
I don't know. I don't know if I would worry about it just because he... But yeah, yeah, if you want to... Yeah, yeah, okay.
I'm trying to rationalize here.
We're trying to rationalize here. That's right. Yes, yes, 100%. That's a great 100%. That's a great way to think about it.
Thank you.
Yes, you are 100% on point, and there's no argument against it, Sean.
Yes, that's right.
I'm ready for a petty cast.
Now, if there were an argument against it, you were hypothetically about to make one there, so go ahead.
Hypothetically, yeah. I might say he doesn't really seem like he's a guy that's like as driven by the external stuff, like one way or the other.
Yeah.
He doesn't seem to me like a guy whose ego is all wrapped up in it or anything.
That's fair.
And sometimes you might think, okay, yeah, but that's, you want the guys that are hungry and all that. Sometimes the guys that just kind of cruise on through and work hard, but not like extraordinary effort or anything, those are the guys that end up being really durable. They're not necessarily fighting through all that. Like, so the sum total of it is that I don't actually think that that'll be a concern. I think he's just going to be the same guy regardless. Kind of like Joe Flacco when he celebrated his big contract by going to McDonald's. I feel like there's a little
Tucker,
bit of,
you're right.
You know,
there's
yeah,
an Applebee's yeah. trip in his future after he signs
yeah,
that big
yeah,
extension.
Yeah, we're going to do it up big and go to Applebee's.
Yep, yep. One more from Tags. Astro fans, talking about how Astro fans are going to feel if it's a Bregman and Tucker offseason with both guys going.
Does it make sense to trade Kyle Tucker and then bring back Alex Bregman? That doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, I don't think Bregman will be back either, and that's going to be tough for Astros fans to digest if they lose both of those players, cornerstone players, but they're just at the point to where they already have a very high payroll. They have so many needs now. They have corner infield needs, starting pitching, relief pitching. They can get a lot of things that address a lot of their needs. Are they going to take a big step back? Maybe, maybe not. Maybe they can build around their pitching staff and still be really competitive.
Okay, so the prevailing opinion seems to be that Alex Bregman is going to leave in free agency. I do wonder if they made a trade, Seth, like the one that was rumored yesterday that Chandler Rome and Ken Rosenthal had with the Cubs, where you get some established major leaguers at key positions for the Astros. Outfield, Seiya Suzuki, who's got 2 years left on his deal at about $18 million per, something like that. He's got $38 million left on his deal for 2 years, so $19 million per. Isak Paredes, who can play first or third base. In this case, he'd be playing first base because I'm going to bring Bregman into the mix here. And then some prospects that help kind of fortify your future, depending on what that looks like. If Alex Bregman is still at all evaluating the Astros, like not just the contract, but what his chances are of winning here.
Yeah.
Trading Kyle Tucker on the surface would seem to make you a worse baseball team in 2025 and in the future. But if you're getting guys back that here in the short term are, you know, Paredes, you're going to have under team control for 3 more years. I guess if you're Bregman and you're that, he knows what the ecosystem looks like here in terms of how they look at cost and things like that.
If you're trying to convince Alex Bregman to not accept a contract elsewhere that's 7 or 8 years long with all that extra guaranteed money, you got to have something enticing, maybe above and beyond just loyalty to the cause and all of that. So that might that yeah in trying to yeah if they lose Kyle Tucker with the idea that they want to retain Alex Bregman, it might ironically be the very thing that drives Bregman away if you don't if it's all prospects or anything else like that.
I think the ability of whatever team he goes to compete to get into the postseason every year has got to be right next to money and years at the top of Alex Bregman's list.
Yeah, the non-money stuff, which you never know with any individual player how much it's actually going to matter. That part of it being, because Bregman knows, I think he appreciates, he's such a baseball nut. He appreciates how rare this run has been.
Yeah.
And it's not so simple as just hopping off to Minnesota or Toronto or any, or the Yankees for that matter, and winning a World Series.
Right. I think there are players that are like, I want to play in LA. No, I want to play in New York. I don't know that Bregman is one of those guys like where the city matters to him. Like, guy spends all his time at the stadium and in batting cages. You know what I mean?
Yeah, Springer, like of a personality type and everything. I know they've got much different personalities, but I feel like Bregman and Springer are kind of just almost, there's a purity to them.
Yeah.
Where I want to believe, like, okay, maybe there's a naive part of me that believes that, okay, there's these guys are just a little bit different than your run-of-the-mill professional athlete.
Yeah,
I don't know.
We'll see. We'll see. Bregman news coming down hopefully in the next several days here. We'll see what happens. All right, final segment coming up. The Rockets, you know what, text page, I'm with you on this. About as big a regular season win as the Rockets have had in the last several years last night, and made even better by the fact that the opposing coach basically cried at his post-game press conference. We'll relive the crying coming up next.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Look, the Rockets have not been in the playoffs for a few years now, so the regular season for the teams that are relevant is a lead-in to the playoffs. You really only play important regular season games if they matter to seeding or getting into the postseason. Now, the Rockets made a little run at the play-in last year. We'll see. Looks like a much better version of the Rockets this year. So, thus, some of these games feel a little more important. And especially when, A, you're going up against the Golden State Warriors, who you've not beaten in 15 tries. And, B, this is a quarterfinal game for the NBA Cup, the in-season tournament. And now that the team I root for is actually relevant and involved and now in the semifinals for the NBA Cup, I'm kind of here for it. You know, I'm here for the parade where we march down La Branch in a couple of weeks, Seth, to celebrate the NBA Cup. Do you think they'll let us have a float in the NBA Cup parade when they secure
a float in the NBA Cup parade?
Or maybe you and I could just drive behind it in a convertible.
It's been my lifelong dream to be, I mean, really just to make the semifinals.
Yeah.
And as a Houston Rockets fan as of late, the semifinals is usually the, okay. The NBA Cup semis, but then to actually snatch the trophy? Ring? What is it?
I don't know. That's a good
pennant?
Question.
Yeah. I don't know what it is. Yeah. To grab that NBA championship award that I've dreamed about forever. Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
Yeah.
We'll be lined up in the parking garages there, just like the Astros parades. Yes.
It's going to be amazing. This is the furthest the Rockets have ever made it in the NBA Cup.
I'm guessing you know this. It's called the NBA Cup, that it's a cup of some sort.
Probably a cup. Yeah. Yeah, it'd be great if it was like a coffee cup, like a mug. Like, here you go. But in all seriousness, really cool win last night for the Rockets. They beat the Warriors 91-90. They were down 6 with a minute 16 to go. Looked like it was going to be same old thing. Van Vliet hits a 3. Şengün gets a bucket. Meanwhile, Draymond's turning the ball over. Steph's missing shots. And then at the very end of the game, after a miss by Steph, there's a scramble on the floor for the ball. Ball's bouncing all over the place. Jalen Green dives on the floor for the ball. Also a good thing to see. Jalen Green getting dog-like out there. And Jonathan Kuminga kind of jumps on top of Jalen Green in an effort to get this loose ball. The referees, in what had been largely a street fight of a game, 91-90 was the final score. They call a foul on Jonathan Kuminga. Steve Kerr, whose Warriors have never gotten calls through the years, through all these championships.
No, certainly never against the Rockets.
No, never against the Rockets either. You're right. Here was Steve Kerr after the game.
Ball situation, 80 feet from the basket with the game on the line. I've never seen that. I think I saw it in college one time, 30 years ago. Never seen it in the NBA. That is, I mean, unconscionable. I don't even understand what just happened. You know, loose ball, diving on the floor, 80 feet from the basket, and you're going to give a guy two free throws to decide the game when people are scrambling for the ball. Just give them a timeout. Give them a timeout and let the players decide the game. That's how you officiate. Especially because the game was a complete wrestling match. You know, they didn't call anything. Steph Curry got hit on the elbow, plain as day, on a jump shot. Just clubbed right on there. No call. So you've established you're just not going to call anything throughout the game. It's a physical game. We're going to call it a loose ball foul on a jump ball situation with guys diving on the floor with the game on the line. This is a billion-dollar industry. You got people's jobs on the line.
Okay. Real quick, I should have set it up a little better. When Jalen Green was fouled with a few seconds left in the game, the Rockets were down one. So that Jalen Green stepped up, made both free throws.
Yeah.
Game over. So that
Kuminga went to the head and neck area. it wasn't just a scramble for the ball. He kind of went all Aziz Alshire. Yeah. Except that this was one where he could have, unlike Aziz, who had to make a split-second decision, Kuminga, you know, he set his sights on Jalen's head and neck area.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a no-no. So, sorry, Steve, that we don't endorse your dirty tactics.
Yep.
Okay, I know that you want, or whatever your perception of wrestling is, the basketball-playing clown.
Oh,
yeah, man. You don't know wrestling.
Soft.
You don't
AM.
Know genuine toughness.
I will say this. I was listening. I could listen to Kerr's arguments for most of that minute and 14 we had right there. Like, okay, you're the opposing coach. It was 80 feet from the basket. I have rewatched the play, and I'm like, all right, yeah, this is for a game where the score was 90-89 at the time. I'm like, yeah, that does look a little marginal. I admittedly didn't watch the whole game. I watched some of it. The part at the end where you start dragging in, this is a billion-dollar industry. People's jobs are on the line. Like, what? Whose job, other than the official that made that call, is any closer to being in jeopardy based on that? Based on a poor call at the end of a December regular season game.
Right, yeah.
Like, the jobs are on the line. Like, what, are you going to get fired, Steve Kerr, if you lose that game to the Rockets? What the hell are you talking about? Jobs are on the line. Is Steve Kerr on the hot seat? Their record's pretty good this year. Jobs are on the line. Get the hell out of here with that.
Yeah, who's losing their job from last night?
Yeah,
what? Please tell me who's losing their job. I need to see pinks. Like, what the hell are you talking about, Steve Kerr?
The only guy closer to losing his job from that whole thing is the guy that you're angry with right now. That referee. Like, and I don't think he's closer to losing his job, but we know they grade people. They grade the officials and whatnot. So
tell Kuminga not to go to the head and neck area. After the officials have spent 2 weeks watching SportsCenter talk about what an evil person Aziz Alshire must be.
Yes.
You know, they've been brained. Your problem, sir, is with the sports media conglomerates.
Yes.
That have just pushed and pushed and pushed and tried to paint Aziz Alshire as a villain until multiple NFL players came out and said, whoa there, Stephen A.
Yeah.
Pump you, you know, slow your roll a little bit.
Man.
Ah, Steve Kerr. The NBA Cup looks like a chalice of some sort. Yeah, that's a boy. Okay, I really want one now.
Yeah, it looks good. It looks like it's a hoop. It's a basketball hoop, it looks like, with the net kind of cascading down, and then it's like a bowl at the top of the hoop, right?
Yeah, I hadn't even caught that.
Because you can see through. Thank you. Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't even realize that's what they were going for.
Yeah, yeah, man.
Okay.
Yeah.
Dude, but it's almost like the holy grail of basketball hoops.
Seth, I went to a musical last night, okay?
That's true. You've got culture. The culture flowing through you.
Yeah, dude, I've still got that culture stank on me right now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So it's cascading, this net right here. It's beautiful. It's beautiful. That was fun seeing Steve Kerr whine like a little baby at
what
the
podium. You're at the hobby center. I couldn't go. You do feel pretty fancy when you're there.
You do. There's valet. Yeah. The seats are, you know, like the theater's really nice.
Well, and we had a private party set up in an area that was like, yeah, good job by Sarah, our boss.
Yep.
She does a good job with the holidays.
Oh, yeah. Big
time. She makes it feel like you're working in a company from like the 1970s.
At Halloween and at Christmas time. Like, she's
it's like, hey, no, we're gonna drink alcohol. We're gonna have a good time.
We're gonna party.
Nobody's gonna be all sensitive about stuff. And here we go.
We're gonna dress up in stuff that you will not wear the rest of the year. Yeah. Just this one day only, like a Halloween costume or an ugly sweater. Now, I like wearing ugly sweaters throughout the holiday season, but there's a lot of people who I think at last night they were probably one and done with their ugly Christmas sweaters.
It's so dicey owning a sweater in Houston.
Yeah.
You know, you think about purchasing a sweater and you're like, you realistically, you got to kind of handicap like, okay, how many times am I actually going to wear this? Because usually what I'll always have over 50% of the time when I've tried to wear a sweater in Houston, I misgauge it,
yeah.
You know, and all of a sudden I'm sweating my butt off and I forgot that I'm wearing just a plain white tee underneath.
Yep.
And yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So it, now the sweaters that I have, some of them, they aren't like typical, like wool, like knit sweaters. They're like, I think I showed it to Lopez. John Lopez
you
is
did.
Here. Reggie Atatula. You saw my Acknowledge Me sweater I had on yesterday.
Yeah, it's a sweatshirt.
It's a nice thin material. Yeah. It's not bad, but it looks like a sweater. It carries itself like a sweater on my torso.
The worst part about any kind of novelty apparel purchase is that the majority of the time it's made out of like nothing but pure acrylic.
Yes.
And then especially in Houston,
yeah.
If you misgauge the weather, you're done for.
You're done, yeah. It's a good point. John Lopez, Reggie Atatula here as well. Reggie Atatula is the first person that I've ever seen at a musical.
Mm-hmm.
Now, granted, he was part of the show. A few of us got pulled up on stage. The MVPs of the pulled up on stage were Patrick Creighton and Reggie Atatula,
no question.
In my opinion.
No
I thought
question.
You were going to be early on, though. Like you were, you had early returns.
They didn't have you do a lot.
I did. Yeah. My scene was not very long.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was only up there for a little bit. Didn't give me many lines. You guys got to perform up there, and I saw something I've never seen before, which is one of the actual professionally paid actors or actresses break character.
She sure did.
To tell somebody on stage, in this case, Reggie Atatula, audience participant, how cute he was.
Yeah, that was the talk of the town, wasn't it?
That was the talk of the lobby afterwards, for sure. Now, I conveyed this story,
mm-hmm.
and Seth was wondering, okay, was it really... Did she really break character, or do you think that tonight's show she's going to say the same thing to whoever's wearing the marshmallow ugly sweater outfit that you were wearing? John, you were there. I'm not going to ask you, Reggie, because you're the subject of this.
Okay.
You had eyes on this.
Mm-hmm.
Was that a legit breaking of character to tell Reggie Atatula he's cute?
Not only did she break character, but I half thought, as it was happening, I thought, she's going to just like throw her arms around him at some point here.
I didn't think it was over.
She's going to ruin the whole production.
Yeah, she was gaga.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's the question. Is Reggie Atatula worth plundering your fledgling acting career?
Oh, well, I don't know about all that, but I will say
from the
perspective of the person who had the statement made to him.
Yeah, yeah.
In that moment, I very much in my head thought, oh, we can stop the show right now. Like, we can stop whatever we're doing right now and get this addressed right here, right now.
Yeah.
Thankfully, I had a little bit of couth and I was able to keep it together.
Yeah. Was it eventually addressed?
I can neither confirm nor deny.
All right, you will have to listen to
that's
the question,
a tease for in the loop.
The question of the day at 10:40.
I get you guys hoarding that for your show.
My original thought for the question of the day was, did you give her the old ugly sweater? But...
O-L apostrophe in front of it.
The old turtleneck.
Okay. All right. By the way, Seth, I did appreciate you defending my cuteness earlier in the program. I was very appreciative of such things.
It came at a cost. I was accused of being a racist on the text line because when Sean first told me the story, in my mind, I heard Ron. And listen, everybody, I'm not that racist. Okay?
He's like, everybody has their biases, you know? Hey.
Two guys that I know pretty damn well, all right, come on. Accuse me of being a racist, not that racist.
It's probably me not enunciating enough where I said Reggie and you heard Hughley or something.
Yeah, Sean's a drunk and I'm kind of racist, but not that racist.
Yeah. I mean,
how much different would the night go if it's Ron in that situation?
Well, you got a whole marriage situation.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I was like, everybody felt giddy to talk to me about this, and I'm like, I feel like that doesn't go the same way if it's Ron.
No.
Ron comes back and like, I don't know how Ron, I don't know Ron's wife much at all or anything, but like, some women might accuse Ron of like somehow like being at fault in that situation.
Okay,
he comes back to his seat and he's just getting the icy glare.
Courtney was not there last night, was
she? She was not there.
Okay,
I think both of the fellas of the drive just
they went
scooted over here after the show. Because, show started. Like, at 6:30 was what was the time. I think we got going around 7.
Yeah.
But at, 6, they're here getting the show done, and they had to scoot over through traffic and such to get over to the Hobby Center.
It was good. It was a lot of fun.
Boss lady picked up the drink tab for everybody.
How about that?
She sure did.
I only had one. I felt guilty. I should have had more.
I had three.
I should have had more. Yeah.
of the jingle juice?
Three jingle juices.
So you were nice.
I was feeling good. My biggest thing was towards the end of the show, like I had to go to the bathroom.
Bad.
You know? Yeah, bad.
Bad.
Like I sprinted past you guys.
Speaking of going to the bathroom, I want to take this opportunity to put our program director on blast. Because, you know, the engagement part of this, right? Like, I imagine not everybody's, you know, excited about that, right? But typically, people just try and look disinterested and hope they don't get called. He went to the restroom when they started picking.
The second time, when they were picking y'all, he pointed at me.
Oh!
He's like, this guy.
And he wasn't even in there for the first
time. Or somebody behind him. I think it was Parker.
Man, that
and
is.
And I was trying to hide, man. I was like, ah,
some scumbaggery right
Yeah, I was
there,
like, hey,
man,
that's kind of nasty work.
I looked out of the corner of my eye, I saw somebody pointing at me.
I was the first one to get picked. We were, Amy and I were sitting in the.
Y'all were front row.
We were front row.
I know you RSVP'd as soon as that email came out.
I did,
out.
Yeah. So, yeah. So
I did love that. That was the hierarchy. You could tell who RSVP'd early.
Oh,
I didn't think about that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So I was sitting in the front row, and Seth, there was like a guy, there was one of the actors in the show. Was like, had to be at least 75 years
old. At least.
Maybe 80. And he was funny as hell. He was awesome. But at the part where they were going to get people to bring him up on stage, he comes right down the steps, walks right up to me. I'm front row, right on the corner there. And he looks at me, he goes, do you want to be a star? And I'm looking at him like, this is how Boogie Nights starts. Yes, I want to be a star. I want to be a great big star. How do you like that?
I want to be a great big star. I want to get hooked on meth.
Great big star. Great big star.
I want to rob some rich guy.
I'm a great big star. I'm a great big star. Yeah.
Can I get one more thing in before you eventually hand this thing
off? Of course. I'm having fun.
Did you have any, was there anything within you as a big wrestling fan that was hurt when she called you Spider-Man and did not recognize what your other sweater was
about? Oh, I didn't catch that. I had my acknowledgement. Me sweater on. Oh, she thought it was Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Went straight over my head.
Okay, so I brought that a grievance to you. My bad.
Yeah, no, that's okay. Now I'm retroactively angry. Now I'm going to that show tonight just to give them a piece of my mind.
I'm going too for other reasons.
Sean, I wish I had
season tickets.
To be on alert for it, because I brought this up before and you didn't know what I was talking about. Did you happen to notice how efficiently the women's bathroom line moves at Hobby Center?
Only because Amy and I went to the bathroom at the same time.
Yeah.
She was out way before I was.
It's nuts. Yeah. I am like, I'm so fascinated by this. It just, they are like, I've never seen, you know, usually it's the exact opposite in any kind of public event. Women are lined up. The women's line just moves like at breakneck speed.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm fascinated by what goes on in there.
No kidding.
Except I cannot go investigate.
And one of those guys from the airport with the lights. Like,
yeah,
come on,
like
get in there.
The unsexy answer would be they just have more toilets or something. Yeah. But I want to know. If there's an operational thing going on.
I asked Brandy, and I wasn't satisfied with her response. She didn't explain it well enough. I was like, no, I need a layout, and you need to show me how this works so efficiently.
Okay, this is another reason for me to go back to the show with Reggie tonight.
Let's go. Let's do it.
All right.
You guys enjoy the show? No, we just wanted to watch the women's bathroom line.
Yeah, that's kind of what we're into tonight.
Reggie had to see about a girl. They say in Goodwill Hunting. Yeah.
And my friend Reggie's talking to a girl. I'm watching the women's bathroom line, taking notes.
Seeing if she's coming out of the women's bathroom.
My emotional support, Sean.
Yeah, that's it. And I'll wear a collar and everything. A vest. All right, Seth, antibodies to you. Football Friday tomorrow.
Antibodies and a turtleneck to you.
Thank you, my friend. An old turtleneck.
The old turtleneck.
Apostrophe, yeah.